Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast, once again, dipping into our archives for a visit in 2016 by the vocalist, keyboardist, and composer Juliana Barwick. Juliana just released a new album called Healing is a Miracle in July, so we thought this would be a good opportunity to revisit this 2016 performance. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Juliana Barwick's music has always been built around the sound of her voice, which she loops and layers to build a haunting, evocative, almost choral sound. Now, on her new album called Will, she's creating an almost orchestral sound. Her voice is still the focus of attention, but with keyboards and guest musicians helping out on cello, percussion, and more vocals, the album offers an expanded sonic palette. Juliana Barwick is back in our Soundcheck studio to play a few of those songs for us, beginning with the album's lead-off track, Saint Apollonia. Here's Juliana Barwick, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
That is Juliana Barwick and the song called Saint Apollonia. Live performance here in the studio with Juliana doing it all herself. It all starts with the voice and the keyboard, but then there's the layering and the looping, and you'll find that on Juliana's album called Will. And it's a pleasure to have Juliana Barwick back with us on Soundcheck. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
The last time you were here was just before Nepenthe, your last full-length, came out.
Right.
And that album was already a kind of album in transition, sound-wise, it seemed. You know, getting a bit more instrumental sounds and things like that. This album, though, seems to really go, you know, for the full kind of sonic palette, as I said in the introduction. Was that a kind of a conscious decision?
Totally. I mean, with Nepenthe, that was just a total left turn for me, because most of my records, or all of my records before Nepenthe, were essentially bedroom recordings with no eyeballs or ears or advice or anything. And then, you know, when I worked with Alex Summers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he and I kind of, you know, did everything together, and then we had plans to have the girls sing and Amina, and it was just kind of this whole project and a lot of people involved. And of course it was in Iceland, so it was like, you know, a very like interesting new experience. And then once I knew I had to make a new record, it was kind of like, oh, I'm gonna go back to doing it myself. Oh no, there's no Alex. Like, what am I gonna do? Where am I gonna do it? And one thing I was interested in experimenting with was with synth sounds and some like low end and things like that.
Yeah.
I performed hundreds of shows after Nepenthe came out, and I knew I'd play a lot of shows with this new record, so I wanted to kind of experiment with synth and stuff and do a little something different on stage.
Now, that song, Saint Apollonia, I mean, it begins almost like a chant. I mean, it almost sounds that the melody, it's a bit more florid than a Gregorian chant, but
mm-hmm.
It sort of reminded me of Hildegard von Bingen, you know, if you know her stuff.
From, I don't.
12th century German,
oh, wow.
German abbess and mystic and, yeah.
Okay.
Wrote these kind of wonderful, florid, ecstatic melodies. It kind of put me in mind of her stuff. But there is a very kind of an element almost of prayer to that piece. It's very spare. You know,
mm-hmm.
the keyboard is, it's pretty much tucked away at the lower end and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you go through the record, you know, the textures are a lot more varied. There's a lot of it, I guess. So how much of that was affected by, you know, this? You weren't in Iceland. You also weren't in your bedroom. You're in all these different places as you're recording. How much does that affect the sound?
It completely does. I'm just, you know, when I make music, it's very, like, spontaneous and visceral. And so environment has, you know, just everything to do with how I'm going to be feeling in the moment. You know, the first place I recorded was at my friend's house upstate, and it was February. And they took me up there one weekend, left me, and were coming back the next weekend. And I was up there completely alone. It snowed like a foot. The novelty and the romance kind of wore off after a couple days, and I just really wanted to hang out with someone really, really badly. So there's like, you know, this word isolation kind of keeps coming up, but that's the only place and time I really felt that way when making the record. And then last summer I went down to Moog in Asheville.
The Moog Fest?
Well, actually, just to do kind of a residency. Residency is a little bit of a strong word.
At the factory?
Yeah, at the mm-hmm. Sound Lab. Mm-hmm. I had done a little something with them at Arco Santi last May, and I'd already met them a couple times, so I wanted to record some stuff there. And that was a very sunny, friendly, positive place to be and record. And then the last place was Lisbon, Portugal, which is very dear to my heart. So,
yeah. Indoors there, or...?
Yeah, actually, I got super lucky. Some friends of mine, they're in a band called Paus, P-A-U-S, and they had just finished building a studio, like, the day before I got there, and I just needed a soundproofed room to record in, and a piano, and they said, oh, well, right this way, and, like, we went in there, and they're like, do you know who this piano belonged to? I'm like, no. And they're like, oh, it was Sufjan Stevens, and he just left it here on his last on his last show when he played the Age of Odds tour, and you know that was really kind of cosmic in a hippy dippy way because he let me use some of his stuff for the Magic Place, so it's very full circle and cosmic.
I had heard that at least part of one song was recorded under a bridge in Lisbon.
That was St. Apollonia. That's the name of the train station that's very close to the studio I was recording in. And there was just kind of this underpass under the train station that I would walk through to get to the grocery store. And it was just like a marble rectangle, basically. And I couldn't help myself and was just singing with abandon every time I went through there. And then one time I was just like, I'm going to just record this with my iPhone. And sang the first thing that kind of popped into my head and went back to the studio and messed around with it. And that's what it became.
With the actual iPhone recording still there? Wow.
Yeah, it was the iPhone recording.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting to hear you say that this all begins so kind of spontaneously and intuitively, because when you make music the way you do, where things get looped and they come around and you have to kind of match up harmonically with them, it seems like that would be a very kind of restrictive way, that you would have to really have things planned out so that you kind of knew where to get in and where to get out and all that kind of stuff.
Like when I perform live or?
Yeah, or even in the case of, you know, just composing, you know, you have a little fragment of your voice on an iPhone and, you know, once that gets looped, you're kind of locked into a kind of a tonal center, if not an actual key.
Right.
And then,
that has happened.
Yeah.
Alex taught me about that. He was like, you're going to have to redo that. I was like, no, I don't want to. He's like, you have to because it's not in a key. I was like, I didn't know that happened. You know?
Yeah. But then you do have to perform these things live. So this album sounds like you were thinking that far ahead when you were making the songs, as you said before, you know, something that would have low end and more keyboards and stuff.
Right.
So you were thinking that far down the road already.
Right. You know, at Arco Santi last year, when I did like a little demo for this mother that I'm playing around with and recorded some stuff on the spot and just kind of re-recorded that once I got to Asheville in the summer. But, you know, they taught me how to use it and I quickly came up with something, but I ended up liking it and wanting to use it. And that's generally how things happen.
Yeah. And in terms of like harmonic movement, because again, there's looping and layering involved, any kind of harmonic movement has to be carefully plotted, I would guess, several steps in advance.
Not at all.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, it's either magic or it's ugly. So, you know, I never really start a loop, like a vocal loop, you know, with a melody in mind. I just sing off the top of my head, and sometimes it's really pretty, and sometimes it just instantly gets deleted.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, the latest effort from Juliana Barwick is called Will, which is an interesting title. It could be a kind of, you know, will, the future tense of some verb, you know, something will happen. It could mean sort of strength of will. It could be a name, you know, a guy's name. Did you have any of those in mind?
Kind of all of them, yeah. And it just kind of like popped in there as a joke almost, and then it just felt right, which is another thing that tends to happen.
Yeah.
And also I kind of wanted something people could say pretty easily.
Right.
Because I have a history of picking really weirdo words, so I wanted to do something that was a little bit easier to figure out.
All right. I liked Nepenthe, but will do just fine. there's an interesting video for the song you're going to do next, which maybe we can talk about after we hear it. Nebula is the song. For folks who maybe are not familiar with your music, are there lyrics per se for these songs?
For a few. I like to keep them pretty buried.
I know, Nebula?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
Maybe you'll hear them.
Let's listen closely to another live performance from Juliana Barwick. Here's the song Nebula. Thank you. Once again, Juliana Barwick performing live on Soundcheck with a song called Nebula from her new album called Will. And again, Juliana Barwick doing it all here in the studio, singing, playing the keyboard and the looper and all the rest of it. So you were saying before, Juliana, how most of these songs begin with just you singing a fragment of something. What about that one? It begins with the sequencer pattern. Did this start as a vocal piece as well?
No, this started with the mother sequence, the Moog mother sequence. Okay. And then I built on top of that.
Yeah. The video for this is shot in the famous glass house that Philip Johnson, the architect, built in Connecticut.
Right.
Did you perform this piece? It's unclear to me whether the video is the version that's on the record or whether you're actually performing it there live in that glass house.
No, I'm not performing it live. We did loop a section of the song because we had the sound reactive light rig set up all over the property. So we just looped a section of it
that the lighting would react.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I used a microphone in the video because it probably would have looked a little strange if I was just walking around the glass house with my mouth open. So that was, that was our idea.
It sort of raises the question I asked you before when making this record, whether the location affected the ultimate sound of the songs. What about when you're playing live in a place like the Museum of Modern Art here in New York or the Museum of Contemporary Art in Detroit? You know, what does that do for you as a performer?
It just depends on what the place is. You know, like one place I always think about is this like 13th century cathedral I played at in Krakow for Unsound 2013. It was just like, you know, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I get to sing in this place. And I've had a lot of experiences like that. And it really makes me emotional to be in, like, you know, places like that. But I feel like if I have a really great sound check and it sounds really good and I'm excited about playing, it doesn't really matter where it is.
So you can bring your own cathedral with you, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
Try to.
You also performed in the Dogfish Brewery down in Delaware. What was that like?
It was great. It was wonderful. I mean, that place is cavernous, so it was really, really, it was really fun. And that whole experience was just a blast, and Sam is awesome, so.
The guy who runs the brewery.
Yeah.
Now, you guys collaborated on a beer.
We did.
Called Rosabi?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have to say, the idea of wasabi, the Japanese horseradish, as an ingredient in beer, at first struck me as just weird for weird's sake.
Yeah.
But I could see how that would like sort of cut through the malt, you know, add a nice bitter note. I mean, did you like it when it finally came off the assembly line and into a bottle?
I really loved it, you know. That whole experience was just funny because Sam has done some like musical beers with other musicians. And of course, I'm the total outlier, like girl making like whatever kind of music it is that I make. It was just kind of like funny that Sam reached out to me in the first place. But we just got to talking, and I really like IPAs, and it's super hoppy. And he just had me send him a list of just things that I like to eat and drink and smell. And one of the things was sushi. And he was like, wait, wasabi, that would be crazy. and you know, when I went down there and I played that show, we were with him in the brew pub the next day, like grating horseradish, grating wasabi, trying it out. It was such a fun experience. And then, you know, it kind of came together with the Louisiana red rice and all of the stuff. And I thought it tasted really, really good. I like IPAs to be like just about as bitter as they can possibly be and as hoppy as they can possibly be.
I'm right there with you, yeah.
And the wasabi, actually, it's not like, you know, that ouch wasabi flavor.
Yeah.
It's more just the kind of like hoppy, kind of minerally taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it feel like some other use of your creative impulse to be making a beer, a kind of a small batch beer like that?
Totally. It was like another one of those, how did I get here, experiences. It was super fun. I mean, I'd been curious about, you know, brewing beer and how it's all done. And Sam is just like so passionate about it. And his passion and enthusiasm is very infectious. And he's a great person.
Now, this collaboration didn't just produce this beer, which was a limited run called Wasabi, but it also ended up producing some songs.
Exactly. Part of the deal was that we would do a beer, but we would also do like a 10-inch. And Sam wanted me to incorporate some sounds from the brewery. So he sent me some different sounds from the brewery, from like packaging to like the bottles running on the line. And I incorporated those into some songs, which ended up being the Wasabi EP, which is really fun.
Speaking with Juliana Barwick about her many artistic and creative endeavors, beer being just one of them. The album, Will, I mentioned in the introduction, has guests. I mean, Thomas Arsenault, who records as Mas Issa, contributes vocals. You've got a cellist. You've got a percussionist. You're very close to forming a band, it seems.
Oh, my. Yeah, that would be really weird. I decided, since I was kind of like, I wouldn't say aimless, but I was kind of like, where do I want to go with this record? What do I want to do? I had three very specific dreams that I'd always kind of had in the back of my head. I like the way male and female voices sound together, and I always wanted to try that. Cello is my second favorite instrument. So I played two shows in the Netherlands last year with my friend Martin. And I was like, will you send me some cello stuff? And he was like, yay, yes. And so that was a huge dream come true. And then lastly, having somebody rock out on drums over a track was years long dream come true. My friend Jamie Ingles,
who plays in Chairlift.
He plays in Chairlift, or he did, and he's been playing in Tan Lines lately. He's played in a lot of bands.
So how does that work? I mean, the cellist sends you stuff first, and then you build a song around that. But if you're adding a drummer to the mix, where does he come in?
Actually, the song that Jamie plays on, the last song on the record, is another mother-based song.
Does mother stand for something, or is it just what they call that?
It's just what they call it, as far as I know. It's kind of funny to talk about to people. You're like, I'm bringing my mother, meaning the thing I'm playing, not my actual mother.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
All right. Yes, it does sound a little weird when you say that. Juliana Barwick with us here on Soundcheck. You want to do Big Hollow next?
Yes.
All right. It's another song from the album called Will from Juliana Barwick, and she'll take her place back behind Mother here in the Soundcheck studio. The song is called Big Hollow. That is lovely. Juliana Barwick performing live on Soundcheck, her song Big Hollow from the album called Will. Another live performance here in the studio. The voice, the mothership keyboard thing there, all the looping and delay devices. And, you know, it was interesting to hear you, Juliana, a moment ago talking about the Dogfish thing. And, you know, they've done work with musicians before. And you said, I'm the outlier. I come in here with whatever this music I do is. If you're clearing customs and the customs official says, you're a musician, what kind of music do you do? What do you say?
In those situations, I try to just kind of keep it simple. I just say, I usually say like choral classical.
Okay.
You know, unless I'm feeling mischievous and say country or something.
And if they call you on it, can you whip out a country tune? Can you sing a little Merle Travis?
Or,
really?
I know every word to Chattahoochee. Are you kidding?
And in terms of classical, didn't you do something with one of the Bach concertos?
Yes, for Red Hot.
What did you do?
I did Adagio number 1, if I'm remembering this correctly. It's been a couple years. But it was like reinterpretations of Bach pieces for a Red Hot compilation. Mm. And I had to memorize every little, you know, lilting little note. And it was a challenge, but it was really fun.
So you did it all with your voice?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Was it one of the violin concertos, do you recall?
I don't know.
All right.
Not sure.
Well, so classical, choral, country, whatever.
Exactly. It's open to interpretation, yeah. Literally.
Yeah, yeah. As is the title of the record, Will.
Exactly.
Which can mean, well, I guess, whatever you want it to. Juliana, great to have you with us here on Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck. Been listening to an episode of the Soundcheck podcast from our archives. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. You can see and hear much more on our website. Check it out at newsounds.org.